Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 48 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Thursday, May 15th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The defense opened its case yesterday in the trial of former Bletchley Middle School principal Joe Robidoux, accused of sexual assault against three female teachers in his building. Defense attorney Julie Willoughby described a wild, alcohol-fueled party culture among the staff at the middle school, with Robidoux and his accusers at the front and center of it. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
They partied like rock stars, Willoughby said, referring to the Friday night gatherings of Bletchley staff that typically progressed from bar to bar in town. Other occasions for staff parties, said Willoughby, were after chaperoning student dances when people went out to decompress. Willoughby suggested that Robidoux's rough-and-tumble behaviors were more than welcomed by the women at these times, and even led to feelings of vindictiveness and rejection when he moved into the district office in January 2013. As she wrapped up her opening remarks, Willoughby offered the jury this perspective.
What I suspect that you're going to learn in this trial is that, use an old-fashioned word, Mr. Robidoux is a cat. And that Mr. Robidoux was not always acting like we would want a representative principal to act. They were partying like rock stars. And Mr. Robidoux owes an apology, certainly to his wife, certainly to the people of Sitka and the Sitka School District. But what the evidence is not going to show is that he committed crimes. Bad behavior, even foolish behavior, is not necessarily a crime.
Jurors heard testimony from two of the alleged victims on the first full day of the trial. The first, a substitute teacher and later student teacher, described receiving encouragement from Robidoux to pursue her master's degree in teaching during the 2011 school year. She described cordial relations with Robidoux until he called her into a storage closet in the back of the science classroom after school hours and allegedly exposed himself to her. She also alleged that on several subsequent occasions he held her hand to the front of his trousers and said, "Look at what you do to me." Asked by District Attorney Jean Seaton why she didn't report the incidents, the teacher, a Coast Guard spouse, said, "I was a sub, new in the community. I didn't know if anyone would believe me. It was just an embarrassment." Defense Attorney Julie Willoughby, in cross-examination, suggested that Robidoux's attentions were not uninvited. The witness agreed that some flirting had taken place and that her marriage of 26 years was not going well. "Did you go out on Friday nights?" Willoughby asked. "No," the witness replied. "Did you go out after school dances with the other teachers and chaperones to decompress? Once to the Larkspur, once to the P-Bar. Had you ever engaged in consensual sexual contact with Mr. Robidoux?" The witness then replied that if the definition of consensual sexual contact was intercourse, then the answer was no. Willoughby then described an incident following an evening at a bar when Robidoux invited the witness to his house while his wife was away. When she arrived, he was naked. Willoughby pressed her for details of the encounter, what he was doing, what parts of her body he touched. She said she couldn't remember. Later at school, Willoughby asked the woman if Robidoux ever kissed her. "I was kissed," she said, "but I did not initiate it." When District Attorney Jean Seaton stood for redirect, the woman admitted that alcohol was involved the night she visited Robidoux's house. She never went back. "Did you ever encourage him to expose himself?" Seaton asked. The witness said no. "Why didn't you report him?" "I'm an outgoing person. I tend to avoid confrontation." The woman also said that she required a letter of recommendation from Robidoux to obtain her current job as a second-grade teacher in Florida. Jurors heard from a second witness Wednesday afternoon who described interactions with Robidoux that led to a charge of assault in the second degree. Following this initial testimony, Superior Court Judge David George sent the jury home and called the parties into his chambers, presumably to lay the ground rules for the further questioning of witnesses. The trial is expected to last at least through the end of the week. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Earlier in their meeting Tuesday night, the Sitka Assembly heard an update from the police department on the problem of illegal drugs in the community. Drug investigator Kyle Ferguson last addressed the Assembly a year ago. Since then, he said, the drug issue in Sitka, quote, hasn't gotten noticeably worse, but it hasn't gotten better either. Ferguson said the major problem drugs in Sitka are heroin and methamphetamines. That reflects a regional trend across Southeast Alaska. When Assemblymember Mike Reif asked for an example of who is involved in drug abuse, Ferguson said it's everyone.
It affects all age groups, all social levels, socioeconomic groups. It's widespread, and it has a tremendous ripple effect. You know, there's probably not a person in the room that doesn't have some friend or family member that's had problems with drugs.
Ferguson said that nearly every crime investigated by Sitka police has some connection to drug abuse. That includes alcohol and marijuana.
There's a drug nexus to nearly every case that the police department works with, and under that umbrella, I'll include alcohol and marijuana as well. In investigations, felony cases, I can't think of a case that I've worked this year that didn't have a drug nexus to it.
Ferguson said the police can't address the issue without community involvement. Many times, he said, incidents that residents don't think are important enough to report, like minor thefts, can lead to breakthroughs in drug cases. He compared his job to collecting puzzle pieces. But all the puzzle pieces in the world won't do any good if there's nobody there to put the pieces together. And Ferguson said the police department is reaching a crisis point in staffing. Ferguson himself is leaving the department this month to join the state wildlife troopers. When he goes, the city will have just one investigating detective, down from 3 2 years ago.
He'll be responsible for everything, every felony case, drug cases, sexual abuse of a minor, sexual assaults. For the investigators, it's a matter of not what I'm going to work on today. What am I going to ignore, and what am I going to prioritize to work on today?
Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt said the department is working to fill vacancies, but hiring takes time. Schmidt also hopes to write a grant to put a full-time officer back in the schools. He said, quote, "You can't just enforce, you have to educate." And the Ketchikan City Council will discuss the idea of a citywide smoking ban during its meeting tonight. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Councilmember Marty West placed the smoking discussion on the agenda but didn't propose any action item. She says it's just something to talk about.
Several people had approached me and asked that I bring it up for discussion at the City Council to see what the interest was or if there was interest in pursuing it. And that's pretty much it. People have asked me before if I would bring up something for discussion, and I have. This seems to have created quite a little firestorm, but I'm doing it at the request of constituents.
West declined to elaborate on the record about the firestorm. The council considered and rejected a smoking ban about 10 years ago. There was significant public comment, with many people opposed to the idea of a government-mandated ban on indoor smoking. West was on the council then, too, and says she was the sole vote in favor of the smoking ban. Since then, several restaurants and bars in Ketchikan have chosen to not allow smoking. In a somewhat historic move, the Sourdough Bar went smoke-free just a few weeks ago. So the big question is, has the attitude changed over the last decade?
I don't know. And that's why I wanted to bring this up for discussion, just to see what the feeling was. It's not some issue that I have had as my priority, but it's something that I think bears discussion. And that's what I hope to do on Thursday night, and I hope it's civil.
Also on Thursday, the council will consider a feasibility study related to placing biomass boilers at Ketchikan Medical Center. The hospital remodel project has begun, and new boilers potentially could coincide with that project. The study would cost up to $35,000. Another issue on the agenda is the expiration of bonds for city and Ketchikan Public Utilities projects. About $5 million of unused bonds remains from two different bond packages that voters approved in 2004 and 2005. But those bond packages both expire this summer. City Manager Carl Amelon recommends that the city prepare new bond packages to place before voters in October. He writes that without the ability to borrow money, the city and KPU will have a tough time maintaining the city's aging infrastructure. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
As Southeast's current cool and overcast weather pattern indicates, the risk of fires in the Tongass National Forest has dropped. A warning was issued last week as warm, sunny weather dried out grass and underbrush. But Fire Management Officer Seth Ross says that's changed.
No, actually, as of today, Monday, May 12th, it seems that the weather forecasts and the current weather indicate that we're going back to our typical kind of Southeast Alaska pattern, coming out of that warm and dry weather. So we are going to, rescind that warning, as it were. But still caution people to just, always be careful with fire in the woods.
Ross says the Tongass sees an average of 17 fires each year. Sometimes it's as high as 40. Most are brush and peat fires. State wildlife officials have closed nearly all moose hunting north of the Brooks Range because of what they call a drastic decline in the population. Moose hunting is closed to non-residents because of a decline of 50% to 75% since 2011. The only resident hunt will take place in late summer. Moose surveys conducted last month found the population on the western north slope declined by 50% since 2011. The eastern north slope decline was 75%. Officials said poor nutrition because of last year's late spring and poor summer conditions are likely to blame. There were few 10-month calves seen, meaning most born last year died. Officials say wolves preying on weekend moose might also be a factor. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. To read comments on our stories on Facebook, click on the Facebook link. No registration or login is needed. And to have KCAW News headlines tweeted directly to your smartphone, tablet, or computer, click on the Twitter link. We're coming up on 1 minute after 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Stay tuned for NPR's Morning Edition. And then at 8:18, I'll have a live interview about the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Tlingit Language Mentorship Program. I hope you can join us for that today. And I hope you have a great morning.